Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kessler's family production. In this episode, we discuss starting an internet business in the year 2000, running an online business today, and IP addresses. Our guest today is Chris Parker, founder and CEO of whatismyipaddress.com. 18 years ago, when the internet was a desolate place, Chris created a site that now consistently gets 6 million visitors per month and generates almost 7 figures per year. Chris has leveraged his technical background and interest managing whatismyipaddress.com for 18 years and has turned it into a thriving business teaching people about privacy and online safety. With teaching in mind, let's get right into this episode and welcome Chris Parker. Chris, you have 6 million people visiting your website each month. That's a lot. Do you feel pressure to make sure that the user gets what they came for?
Yeah, it's actually, it's at times it keeps me up at night. It's important to me that they get what they're expecting.
I would imagine so. How do you keep up with that? Because just like any website, just like any business, there's issues, there's errors that come up. Just this morning, we noticed that LinkedIn was having some problems with their website. And I researched it, and it wasn't just today. It's been going on for a long time. And they have a community that they have to, you know, make sure is happy. There's going to be issues that pop up. When those issues pop up, how do you deal with it? You know, you've been through a lot. How do you make sure that you don't lose your sanity when it comes to it, while at the same time making sure that the customer is getting the best experience that they can have?
That's a big question, and we can take it a lot of different ways. There's business aspect of it, of, you know, making the information on the site easy to find, easy to read. Is the site aesthetically pleasing? One of the things that I've always had to wrestle with is balancing how much money I make, the ads, all that kind of stuff, with the user experience. There's lots of sites out there where you go to the site, there's like two sentences and like 15 ads, and then you got to go to the next page, the next page, right, and the next page. And you're like, it's not worth it. You didn't deliver what you promised. So there's that aspect of it. And then there's also the infrastructure aspect of it. Unfortunately, having a website entitled whatismyipaddress.com and getting lots of traffic, I draw attention that I don't like. I get quite frequent denial of service attacks on my site, and each one of those things is a headache and a hassle to deal with. And there's some fun stories there if you want to talk about them.
Yeah, well, what you just said there's some fun stories that we can talk about. It sounds like you have a great perspective when it comes to this. You know, there's going to be issues, even no matter what happens on this journey that you've had to get to 6 million users, right, or 6 million visits per month. But talk to us, because not everyone who's going to listen, or most people do not have 6 million visitors to their website. They might have one visitor, or 100, or 1,000, or a little bit more than that. But I would imagine, just talking to you offline and now talking to you now, is it hasn't changed the way you look at the site, because it sounds like to me you want to help that one person. So if I'm going to your website, you want to make sure that I get value out of it. What do you tell people that are like, well, Chris, I don't have 6 million people coming to my website. I might have 100 people coming to my website. So we really shouldn't be talking. I need to talk to someone else. What do you say to all that?
Well, it's all about providing value. People will link to you. People will talk about you. People will use your website if you actually provide the value that you claim to provide. If you say, I'm going to give you the best recipe for making sponge cake, it better doggone be a great recipe for sponge cake, and it better be easy to follow with pictures. And there's all sorts of stuff that you can do to make content engaging and get people to come back. You got to deliver on what you promise.
That's right. So you've been delivering on what you promised, and you started your internet business, I believe it was about 20 years ago, which is when this thing started really getting going. What was it like starting an internet business? And was it the year 2000 or thereabouts? Am I correct with that?
Yep. I launched whatismyipaddress.com as a technical solution that I was having for a company that I was working for. It was never intended to be a business. It was just I needed to know the IP address of the internet connection of the office that I was in, and Alta Vista didn't answer that question for me, and there wasn't a quick website which I could find. And I thought, you know, that's a really simple, easy website to make. I could put that on a Windows NT server and my 1.5 megabit DSL connection at home, and I can make that a website. And that's what the first version was. You went to the website and it just displayed the IP address. Nothing else.
So
no ads, no text, nothing.
Yeah. So you found a need. You had something that you needed and it worked. And then you said, well, I think other people could get use out of this, and let's make it as simple as possible. Let's not just try to create something that is totally confusing. And that's it, right? So at the end of the day, that's what the general idea was.
Exactly. It was just designed to provide the information. There were other things that I was trying to do online as businesses, and this wasn't one of them. It was like, hey, this is just a very simple question, a very simple answer. It never even crossed my mind that it could be a business opportunity.
So from there, you have the site up, you're talking about it. I'm assuming people ask you about it. You're telling some people. How does it grow? We're going back 20 years now and social media wasn't around yet. What were you doing to get the word out there about this new site?
Well, here's the, in fact, I really wasn't doing anything other than, which you don't have to do anymore really, is search engine submissions. I was just, you know, submitted to Alta Vista. Gosh, what were the other ones? Well, Yahoo had a search engine. Google didn't even exist then.
Netscape, right? Didn't they have
search engines? Netscape had a search engine. Was it Open Directory, ODP?
Okay. Ask Jeeves, but maybe this actually came around later, I believe.
Ask Jeeves came out probably, I think that was 2005 or 2006. Okay. I did run pay-per-click and some of those really, you know, the kind of the pre-Google ad, pre-AdWords days where I was paying, you know, 1 cent a click to get people to my site and realizing, wait, I'm not making any money. I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. But so then so you're submitting it. It's going to the different search engines now. And so people are going to come around and find it. And we fast forward. So I'm imagining at this time, people are starting to find it and you're building your site maybe, but like, there's mistakes along the way. There just has to be. I would imagine, you know, as you go through this, you're saying, oh, wow, if I had known now what was going to happen, I would have done something differently. What are some of those mistakes that you saw take place that almost took you down?
So there's a couple of them. I initially hand built the website. Back in the days, it was before WordPress, before Joomla, before any of the common CMSs, and so I ran it all on a server in my home, and that presented its own issues. When the internet would go out, guess what? My website would go down. When I get a whole lot of traffic, guess what? The website would go down. those kind of things became very problematic, and because I wasn't thinking of it necessarily as a business, my solutions to those issues were not they were fun for me, but they probably were really bad business decisions. My solution to that was, well, I need a bigger server in my home. I need more internet connections. I need devices that load balance across internet connections. Really all fun, technically interesting to implement, but really just bad decisions to make. As an example on that, my wife is from Singapore, and we were visiting Singapore, and I was in the airport. We were about to ready to fly out somewhere else, and my website went down from a denial of service attack, and here I am halfway around the world going, I can't do anything about this. Luckily, I had my brother said, hey, go to my house, do this. Let's hope it works. He's, you know, a technical guy, so he was able to help me out, but it wasn't in a co-location facility. I wasn't paying anybody to provide maintenance or support on it. Here I was halfway around the world with no ability to directly interact with it, which was a huge, huge, huge mistake.
So how do you get over that? Because so you have the idea, you have something that's working and you understand the technical backings of it. But maybe at this point, you didn't have the business savvy. You were making the business mistakes, not necessarily the technical mistakes. How do you overcome that at this time? Is this when you go out and partner with new people to get help on that side of it? Do you learn? What do you do from there?
For the most part, up until recently, I just tried to figure it out on my own. I was working a full-time job and doing this on the side. So to me, it was still kind of in this this hobby mentality. And I was like, well, I'll figure out how to learn it. I'll deal with it. If the site goes down for a little while, well, maybe that's not the best thing to have happen, but it's not my, you know, it's not my daytime income. It's not my full-time income. As I transition to doing this full-time, now those things become magnified. It's like, well, the site cannot go down. I can't have outages. I have to start making good business decisions. And, you know, when I was younger, I'd read a business book and I just couldn't get anything out of it. I had no practical application. It didn't mean anything to it. In the last year and a half, I've hired a business coach. I've learned way more about business than I ever thought I would in the last, you know, year and a half. I'm reading like a business book or listening to a business book, probably new one every couple of weeks, and really trying to find like, how can I implement this? Or, oh my gosh, if I just had done that 5 years ago, my life would be so much easier.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome because you have a successful site, right? You have things that are working for you. And just recently you said, I got to take this even more serious. I got to take this to the next level. I need to start reading. You run into a lot of young people and old people that say, no, I'm past that. I don't need that help. And here you go with a successful site, a successful business to say, I need to take this to the next level. Was it because the site was crashing, or did you talk to someone to say, no, Chris, you really need to take this to the next level? What got in your head to say, now is the time to do that?
I think it was actually, in some sense, forced upon me. The employer that I was working for full time effectively went out of business, and I had a decision to make. Do I dive into the deep end on my own business and make this my 100% effort, or do I get a daytime job and continue to kind of play around with this at night? And it's kind of this hobby side gig, side hustle thing. My wife and I sat down, we talked about it and prayed about it and was like, okay, let's not just guess at this, or, you know, let's, you know, just, hey, let's just hope it works out. But we had a plan that was, okay, I need to grow my business, grow my income in the next 6 months. I need to make up my daytime job salary. That's the goal. That's the plan. That's the measuring stick. And I realized, okay, I need help to do that. I can't just applying more time in and of itself is not going to make it happen. I've got to change the way I do things. I've got to do things differently. I've got to think of this as a business and not a hobby anymore.
Okay. So what happens a lot of times is entrepreneurs say they have this vision of like, I'm going to do this. And then they just make that happen. And other times there's other events that spark that make that. And that's kind of where you fall in. It's like, oh wait, something is happening here and I need to make a decision. You think about it and then you reapply everything that you've learned and the things that you don't know, and you go and focus all your energy on that. It sounds like that's obviously what you've done. So as you look today as entrepreneurs and business owners like yourself that have good ideas, maybe they don't have the start that you had with your website, how should entrepreneurs today be thinking about their business to say, hey, I want to create something. I want to use a website. I want to use digital media. I want to do all these different things. What type of advice would you have for someone today that's going about it, whether they have an existing business or whether they don't and they're getting started?
So I'll give this from my perspective. My wife and I are both fairly risk averse. We don't gamble. We don't make big stock plays. We're not, you know, hey, what's the next big thing? That's not who our makeup is. And so I want to be clear that my perspective is from the conservative point of view when it comes to that. I think it's really neat in the last couple of years, the gig economy, that it is totally acceptable nowadays to moonlight, to have a day job and have a side hustle. I think you've got to figure out how to be consistent about the attention and the effort that you put into your side hustle, and you have to have a plan about it. And I know a number of people who are like, oh, I've got this side thing that I'm doing, but they don't have, they're like, oh, I hope it becomes big, but they don't have a plan. They haven't sought down and said, okay, well, what do I actually need to do to grow it? What are the steps? Who do I talk to? It's, well, I'll work on it 5 hours this week and 30 hours next week. Then my girlfriend's going to get mad at me, so I'll go back down to 5 hours. But I think it really takes just consistent pressure to move things forward. And you've got to look at what's the most important thing to do today that can grow my business? What's the most important thing I need to do tomorrow? And just take those steps one at a time.
Well, small steps. And yep. you laid it out there. And we say that, I say it to my kids, just get a little bit better today. And it is cliche. And now a lot of people say it. But it's true, because that's all you're trying to do is just get a little bit better today. And whether that's in your mainline business or your side hustle business, right? That is what we're trying to accomplish. We talk a lot about the side hustle. I mean, a side hustle can be inside of a large business too, because you might have an agenda as to what you're working on. You know, like for example, in our business, we're an insurance group, insurance brokerage company, but we saw opportunities in the marketing space. We started creating our own content. In a way, that was our side hustle. We didn't know necessarily where it was going, but we gave it a lot of attention. We gave it a lot of time. And next thing you know, we build a marketing company off of it. And then a podcast is launched. It's all these different things. So that side hustle can be an existing business that is now, you know what, I always thought, let's not let us get disrupted. Let's disrupt our own business, because we see there's all this disruption that is going on out there. I also think you made a great point about being risk adverse. I think a lot of people make these assumptions like, well, you're just willing to take that risk and I'm not willing to do that, so therefore I don't want to put myself out there. And then we talk to someone like you and it's the opposite, right? That's not the case. That's a generalization to say, well, every entrepreneur is just willing to just throw it all on the table. And to a point, yeah, at some point you have to put your chips in the middle, right? But you're not that way. You weren't that way. Your wife wasn't that way, because that could be the other side of it. Someone could be encouraging you and forcing you to do it. But it's like, no, actually you lay it all out there. And you try to actually put the chips in your favor, the odds in your favor. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you probably came to that realization where, well, you're becoming an entrepreneur and you are putting your chips in the middle. You feel like you stack the odds in your favor. Am I right?
Absolutely. I've done the research. I've done the work to, it's not going to be a risk. And I see the danger in when you have, particularly with a married couple, one person's risk averse and the other one's a risk taker. You've got to figure that out and work that out in your family and how you do things if you're trying to do a side hustle.
Now moving,
you don't want to destroy a relationship over it. You got to figure out how to make it work together.
No, absolutely not. So now your business is moving. The competition. And your competition can be in so many different ways. There's direct competition, and then there's just this, you're not sure what your competition is, right? A water company might think that their competition is another water company, when actually it's just anything, right? It's anything that exists out there. It could be Coca-Cola or another brand or any of those things. But that said, you know, the internet in general, I think, is all competing with one another. There's so much being put out there, so much content, so many websites. What are you seeing right now is the biggest, you know, obstacle for, not maybe for yourself, but for other businesses that are creating, websites that's where their business lives online?
The thing that I see that is potentially scary for a lot of industries, and I saw myself face this, is companies like Google, Amazon, Facebook. A couple of years ago, Google started answering in the search results, what is my IP address? They basically, in some sense, took away, when someone's doing that search query, in some sense, there's no reason for them to even ever leave Google. I was fortunate enough that I was building lots of other content that change did not ruin me, but there were other of my competitors that Google starting to answer that question cratered their traffic, because all their traffic was just that one search phrase. That was the only thing that their website was doing. And once Google took that away, they were gone. So I think you really have to kind of always be thinking, well, if my biggest source of traffic went away, what would I do? What's my plan B? What's, you know, what else can I offer other than my core product? In some industries, I think it's difficult. You know, if you're a beverage company, getting into, you know, widgets might not be a good business move. I think for everyone, it's going to be different. But those three organizations stand to put a lot of people out of business in the way that Uber and Lyft are, you know, hurting taxi companies.
Absolutely. So you are on this podcast. I see you on social media. We're connected on LinkedIn. We're connected on Twitter. Is this where you see yourself more as the brand? The what's my IP address obviously is important, but you become the person. So where a business could say, hey, Chris, we need your help. And I'm not saying you're going to become a consultant, but there's other things out there because we like your content. We like your ideas and we want to talk to you more about that. Is that kind of the mindset you have? Because you're absolutely right. We can go to Google now and I do this, but I can get all my research by the results that I get in Google and I never have to click through to that website because they're posting it. I can get a lot of social media feeds there. I can get the news feeds. I can get the web feeds. I can get videos and I can just get it all right there without clicking anything else besides staying in Google. You know, no different than if I go to Facebook. Facebook doesn't want you leaving Facebook. That's why results of a post are going to do much better if it was natively post in Facebook. Same thing on LinkedIn. They don't want the links inside the post. They want it outside of the post because they don't want people clicking out of there. But going back to it, is that where the personal branding comes in for you? Is that part of it?
Yeah, that's something it's still evolving for me and I'm trying to figure out, you know, I've got this website that has been tremendously successful to me. I have no illusion that this website is going to exist forever and, you know, be a cash cow for me. At some point, something's going to change. The way the internet works, the way search engines work, the way information works, AI, something's going to be massively disruptive to me at some point. And then I need to at least start thinking of what can I do differently. And so, you know, that was one of the things that my business coach has really helped me is to start doing lots of things that I'm really uncomfortable with and getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
That is probably the best advice you give a lot of good advice, but that one piece right there, someone who's has had a successful website for all of these years and then taking it to the next level and say, now what can I do differently? Because make no mistake about it, your website could be gone tomorrow, just like yes. Anybody's website, anybody's business could be gone tomorrow. We've seen it. You know, we talk multiple times in here. We're not in the health insurance space, but we know health insurance agents, and we've seen health insurance agents in the state of North Carolina be put out of business overnight because the government came in there and said, you know what, you're not going to get paid commissions anymore on the sale of individual health insurance. Bye-bye. And yeah. What have you done? Did you see that coming? And maybe you couldn't have seen it coming, but at the same time, even if you couldn't have seen it coming, there's still other things that you could have done. So even if you didn't think that Google could have done what they did, you still could be doing other things differently, just like your business coach is saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think that even comes down to the people who are, you know, I'm never going to do a side hustle. I'm just going to do my corporate gig. It's really about what are you doing to make yourself a better employee? Are you doing in life insurance and health insurance, you have continuing education stuff that you have to do. But in a lot of other industries, your company doesn't require you to get continuing education. But I think it's so valuable for people to go to the industry events, go to conferences in your industry to, you know, meet new people. I mean, the best way to get a raise is to go sideways, not get a promotion at your company, but go sideways and make an extra 10% in that transition. But the only way that's going to happen is if you're constantly working to grow your skill set and be better at what you do, not just the same today, tomorrow, next month.
Yeah, I thank you for saying that because we talk about all the time. I can't force you to read a book. I can't force you to go to a new event. I can't force you to go sit down with this person and take something from them. But when other people say it over and over again, maybe it hits certain people to say, oh yeah, maybe I should do that. And you're right, like real estate, if you're in medicine, if you're in insurance, there is continuing education, but let's be honest, you know, a lot of those things that you go and see, I'm not talking about medicine, but just in the insurance business alone, this stuff is so dated and irrelevant to the work that you're doing. So even that doesn't work that well. But at least, like you said, at least you have to stay in the game. You have to read something. You have to take a test to prove it. But a lot of these other industries are like the Wild West. Like in the marketing industry, you can claim to be an expert of something and you've never done anything before. But if you have a good Instagram profile and you get people to follow your stuff, you can then become the Instagram guru, but you've never really done it. Now, eventually the bad goes away and the good rises to the top. But that is what we're dealing with nowadays. So, but going back to it, I do think it's important that you said like that continuing on with your education, genuinely meaning it, and going out and talking and listening to other people. And I think that's where you have value. You know, something that I was reading about you is you have a lot of content, and you're going to have to take this one over. But on the IPv6 versus what we have right now, which is the IPv4, you have knowledge of things that other people do not have. So let's go into that a little bit. We have IPv4 today, and I actually went to your website, and it's one of the first things that pops up. What is IPv4? What is coming with IPv6? And what does this all mean to everybody in the real world?
So the difference is when IPv4 came out, there was this thought that, well, there'll never really be that many machines on the internet. It's just going to be research institutions. It's just going to be, you know, large entities, and, you know, I forget the number off the top of my head. A few hundred million, a billion IP addresses is perfectly adequate for every machine that will ever get on the internet. Well, fast forward the Internet of Things. Let me look around my house. I've got my Nest thermostat. I've got my Alexa. I've got my Ring doorbell. My security cameras. All these things are connected to the internet, and there's not enough numbers to go around. I think the number on IPv6 is there's basically enough for every grain of sand on the earth to have its own IP address. So every star to have its own IP address. Now, maybe we'll get to the point where that's not enough, but that'll carry us for another, a good 20 or 30 years before we go on to something new. But it just allows more devices, more connectivity, more things to connect. It throws people for a loop because people are used to seeing, 192.168.1.1 or whatever. Now there's like, what are these letters and numbers? What's going on here? It's great for cell providers. They can now assign unique IP addresses to each cell phone, as opposed to having to do what's called network address translation. And the number of IP addresses, with it being a larger number, just makes it easier for all the platforms to be able to move and connect devices.
Does that create disruption? Because you're right. I mean, when you were talking about this, I'm just looking around my office right here, and I think there's five or six devices or things that are connected to the internet, and I think about my house, and it's just like you were going through yours, like it's just crazy that just so many devices now. Does this create disruption? Like you said, this is really good for the cell phone companies, but at the same time, for a lot of the stuff that was going on, does this create disruption for them? Because they created a certain way. Now they all got to go back in there. All the software engineers have to go back into their devices, and they're going to have to update this. Or is this going to be seamless? I can't imagine that would be the case. But
the transition has been mostly seamless. IPv6 has been kind of the standard for cell phone companies for probably 4 or 5 years now. Apple kind of led the game when it came to like applications, and they forced their application developers, you must support IPv6 in your applications as of this date. If you don't, we won't allow your app on the store. So you have companies like Apple who have forced the developers to be current, and other entities are kind of doing the same thing. Again, it's the sort of thing where old computers, it's going to have – at some point, older computers will have a problem. There's a lot of fail-safes to handle that kind of transition, and it's been, for the most part, fairly smooth and mostly transparent to almost everybody. And that's the great thing about in some sense about the internet is it just works.
Yes.
until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't, and then you get upset, and then it comes back on, and then like it never was wrong before, so now you're happy. Well, I think it's fascinating because we live in a time where we have all these tools, we have all these resources. I can go to the internet and find out my IP address with a click of a button, end up on your website, and that's a tool that's important to a lot of people. And that's where we live now. And it's like you're saying, is that there's people developing products and tools out there. And, you know, people talk, well, your phone, your iPhone or whatever phone you use. And I'm like, well, it's not really a phone. It's a device that does all these things. It's a computer and it can do amazing things. And if you allow it to do the great things that it can do, you can build a business off of it. In many ways, I feel like that's what we've done. And I think that's what you've done. And you started mm-hmm. super early. And I think that's a huge advantage. But like you said, you had to learn all these different things along the way, and you're continuing to learn. And I think that's important. It's important for young people that, you know, we bring on young people in our company and, you know, hey, look at this person. This person's been through it and they're still learning. They're still reading books. So it doesn't stop. So I appreciate you coming on, spending time with us to talk about these different things. With what is my IP address and just your career and where you are today and what's going on in your industry. So I appreciate that. I do want to go into some other questions too. We'll go a little bit faster here.
Sure.
And I'm going to ask you, the first one is, if you were not the CEO of What Is My IP Address, what career would you be in?
You know, it's funny. My wife and I have always talked about starting a breakfast and lunch restaurant. And it's a great dream. It's fun to think about, oh, what kind of food would we offer? But everybody I know in the food industry works like 80-hour weeks. And it's a tough, tough industry. So while that sounds like something I would like to do if it could like be magically done for me, but I'd probably end up going back to, you know, what I'm good at, and that's web development. And I have lots of experience in the life insurance industry, and there's lots of opportunity there because it's an incredibly archaic paper industry. So there's lots of opportunity for technological advances there. So I'd probably go that direction.
What would have been your main food that you would have served at your breakfast and lunch? I just got to know that.
International breakfast ideas.
Okay.
So where you take in, you know, different cultural dishes from around the world and because there's so many great breakfasts out there.
Yeah. I mean, breakfast and lunch places. I love breakfast. I love all the meals. So we would show up, but I get it. It's a tough business.
Yes,
for sure. So you work remotely, and we've talked about this offline, and you read about some of the stuff that you have going on. What is your favorite thing? If you just got one thing that you like most about working remotely.
Flexibility, in that I can, if I want to do my grocery shopping at 2 p.m, that way my wife and I have more time on the weekends to do something, I can do it. If I want to look over at the side of my desk and see a dog, he's there hanging out with me. I don't have to be stuck in someone else's office from some arbitrarily, well, you need to be here from 8 to 5, regardless of how much you get done. You need to be sitting in this office. I like the flexibility, being able to do the things that I want to when I need to. So if I've got a friend who's having a bad day, I can, hey, let me come on over and let's go grab lunch. I can do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All that said, like a true entrepreneur, you're also, very well traveled. If you were going to go on a 1 week trip tomorrow outside of the United States, where are you going?
I have two answers for that.
Okay.
Singapore. It's where my wife is from. Her family is there. And if you like to eat, you have to go to Singapore. Just amazing food culture there. It's a blast. If you want to do lots of fun activities, don't go to Singapore.
But if you want to eat, so okay.
But if you want to eat, go to Singapore. And we want to go to Japan. I think it seems like a really interesting country, lots of history that, you know, we don't have here in the U.S., like hundreds and hundreds of years of history. Japan's got thousands of years of history. It'd be great to kind of experience that.
Okay, so now I'm going to do this one quick thing we do with a lot of our guests. We love sports here. Not everyone we talk to loves sports, and that's okay. But I'm going to say from now on, you're only allowed to root for one sports team for the rest of your life. What team would that be?
So I thought long and hard about this question because I am not a sports person. So I came up with a good answer.
Okay.
BattleBots. I love watching BattleBots. Robots destroy each other in the ring and bits and pieces fly everywhere. So I would be a big fan of following Bronco.
I think that's great. I think it's a great answer. And there was a movie, and it's a kids movie, and I'm going to draw a blank on it. If I remember, it's put in the show notes. But that's how the movie was based around. Is and it was a super popular movie. Hero, Big Hero 6. That's it. It
yes.
came to mind. Yeah. So that's what I think of, right? When I think of BattleBots, I think that's a great answer. So I appreciate that. So you've had a lot of moments, and you've already talked a lot about these moments, but I'm going to ask this question and interested to see where you take it. When was the moment you told yourself you needed to make it happen and you gave yourself no excuses?
I think that was that transition from going from working full time, getting laid off, and having to make that decision, okay, you're going to make this happen and make it a business, or it stays a hobby, when that transition happened. That was the make it or break it moment.
And here you are. You made it happen. So I'm glad you did. I'm glad you came to talk to us for a little while. Chris, what is the best way that people can get a hold of you?
If people want to get a hold of me directly, there's lots of contact information for me, all social media and stuff, at cgparker.com. And of course, if you need technical assistance, you can visit whatismyipaddress.com and submit a support ticket, and we'll do our best to help you out.
And you can just put that right into Google, and it'll show up number one on the search. So, Chris, I appreciate it again, spending time with us. It taught a lot to myself and the people that are going to listen. Good luck with everything that you have going on. Let's absolutely stay in touch. But more than anything, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Eric. I had a great time.
Chris, it has been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From teaching our listeners about creating, building, and managing a successful internet company to always finding ways to improve in business, we are better off for spending time with you. The perspectives from Chris on getting ahead of the curve are now perspectives you as a business owner can use for yourself. And for that, Chris, thank you. And for anyone looking to talk to Chris about his website, we encourage you to reach out to him. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to our CazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. This podcast exists in large part because of CazCM, the content marketing business inside CazSource, Inc. CazCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at CazSource to you. Learn more by visiting CazCM.com. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.